Okay.
Welcome to the Global Citizen Life podcast. Thank you, Trevor, very much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very happy to be here.
So, can you tell me and the listeners a little bit about where you are? I know where you're at, but they don't know, and how you ended up choosing the destination you're in.
Yes, definitely. So I'm in Istanbul, Turkey, and I was here originally 10 years ago. After college, I was doing some traveling. This place had always been on my radar. My mom went here when I was really young, and it just sparked a curiosity that I was never able to let go of. So I came here after college, and I ended up staying here for about 10 months. I met a person, we ran a tour company together. It was a great time. I also met a woman and we started to date. I went back to Colorado, though. That's where I'm originally from. And we went our separate ways. So for 7 years, we didn't talk. We had no contact. But 3 years ago, we rekindled our relationship thanks to Instagram stories. And well, that's why I'm here. So I'm here for her.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So technology is great and interesting in many ways, and it was great that you could reconnect. How was the process for you from moving from the United States to Istanbul? Because I was talking to a woman a while ago, and she said, like, with moving and getting residency and things like that, seems to be getting harder and harder each year.
Yep, I can say the same thing, undoubtedly. It originally, when I was first thinking of moving here, so that would have been, I guess, about 2 years ago, it seemed like the process was going to be, I mean, incredibly easy. And so I wasn't worried about it at all. I thought I'll get to Turkey and I'll take care of all the paperwork once I'm here in Turkey. But reality was quite different from that. I think that when I came, it was on the heels of Russia's invasion into the Ukraine. So there were a lot of Ukrainian refugees as well as Russian immigrants, and then a lot of Syrian refugees coming to Turkey and Istanbul. So it became much more difficult for just your normal sort of tourist who wants to stay for a while to get a residency permit. In the end, we were able to once we got married. That was kind of the only path available to us in the end.
Right. Yeah,
Yeah.
the woman that I was talking to, and I'm just blanking out on her name right now. And she's been there for, I think it's been like 5 or 7 years, and has had to renew a
Okay.
few times. And she says even with renewals that there's no guarantee. She's known people to live there for years, and then the government just says, nope, we're not renewing, and then they have to leave. And so it's been her home for many years, and every time she has to renew, she says she gets very, very nervous about it because there's no guarantee that way. And
Yeah.
most
Yeah.
other countries, I don't definitely don't want to say all because it's not the case, but most renewals are quite easy, and it's almost expected that a renewal is no
Right.
problem, but not there in Turkey. And understandably so, with such an influx of immigration and people moving there and refugees. And I mean, I've been to Istanbul 2 years ago, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago. It was just, I mean, we were still in the pandemic, but just kind of getting out of it. So travel was allowed. I still had to do all the testing and all of that kind of stuff. And even then, the amount of people that live there, like there's so many people in such a small space.
So many people. So many people and then some. I mean, what are official numbers? I think they're like around 15 to 18 million, I think. But everybody in the city says there's at least 20 million people who are living
That's
here. Yeah.
what I hear too. When I was there,
Yep.
generally everybody said anywhere between 3 and 5 million more than what
Yes.
is officially stated there. And that's to me, that's crazy. I mean, if even around
Yeah.
20 million, like And and that's just Istanbul. That's not even all of Turkey. Like, that's just Istanbul. And I'm from Canada. And Canada's a really big country. And we just hit, earlier this year, last year, we just hit 40 million people. So like half of the population of Canada is in Istanbul. And so it can be, you know, for people who don't like big cities, Istanbul is definitely not the place to go.
No. I'm from a little town in Colorado. It's called Basalt, Colorado, near Aspen. I mean, yeah, our population growing up, it was like 4,000. You know, it was so quiet, so empty. So yeah, this is a far cry from those familiar experiences.
How have you adjusted to that from you know, quiet and nice to 24/7 kind of busy people crazy? And even when I was there, and when I went for a walk in the park, because I was like, oh, I'll just go for a walk in the park, and I'm thinking, I'm still around so many people. Like, there's no escape of people in the city.
You're totally right. That's my experience too. And even when I'm like, oh, I'll go for a walk in the park, well, getting to the park is no small matter either. Especially, you need to take public transportation or something, which is full of people. But I don't mean to complain about it. I mean, it's been a radical adjustment. There's no denying that. But there's so much life. It's teeming with life. It's a vibrant city. There's always something happening. There's always something interesting. Somebody's always doing something. And there's no space to get bored. There's definitely a lot of experiences of totally feeling overwhelmed, but I kind of like that because it keeps me on my toes. It keeps me active. It keeps my brain going. I mean, yeah, there have been moments, of course, where I long for the peace and quiet and solitude of nature. And I found little nooks and crannies here and there. Or if you wake up particularly early, you can't really stay up late enough, I've realized, to get past everybody who stays up late. But if you wake up early, 5 o'clock or something, I can walk down to the water's edge here. It's called the Golden Horn. And I'll do that from time to time. And I'm not the only one, but relatively speaking, I am.
Right. Well, it's to finding what works for us, right? Like some people, absolutely, they think Istanbul, there's no way. It's too busy, too crazy. And that's great. But there's lots of other really beautiful places in Turkey as well. It doesn't just have to be Istanbul. There's plenty of smaller towns that are close to the water or more inland, if that's what people prefer. So there definitely is a lot of options within Turkey. I haven't seen a lot of Turkey myself. Mm-hmm. It's a place I really want to go back to and see more of, because I did enjoy my time there.
Yeah, there is a lot to see, more than I realized. Yeah, if you ever come back, I'll give you a good travel itinerary. You know, the most popular part of Turkey, and rightfully so, is that southern region along the coast. And it's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. I mean, some of those beaches and islands, they're like the Greek Isles, but just they don't have the same reputation.
Right.
But they, to me, they're equally as beautiful. So I knew that part. But I've been in awe of the diversity in terms of the geography. Like, you can go up to the north along the Black Sea coast, and you have towering mountains. Almost, they're called the Kachkar Mountains. They're on par with the mountains in Colorado. And those mountains are only an hour or two from the Black Sea, which is incredibly unique for me. And I mean, there's areas over there that are so lush and so green, it's like being in the jungles of Hawaii. And I mean, there's obviously many more places, but those are a few that just speak to the diversity. It's incredible. Right.
And I really find that with a lot of places. So I lived in Spain for about 5 years, and I go back and forth quite a bit between Montenegro and Spain. So, and Montenegro is quite quite close to Turkey.
Yes, it is.
And it's true, though. Once you start, like, we just get pictures of things that we see on TV or where most of the tourists go, and we just assume that that's what it is. And I mean, Montenegro is quite small, but with Spain, it's so big, and there's so many different landscapes throughout the country that you can feel like you could visit several different countries, even though you haven't left the one that you're in, once you start exploring and kind of getting away from those touristy places and the big cities and really seeing what life is like there.
Yeah, I was in Spain for study abroad in Sevilla, and the Sierra Nevadas, for example. Yep. I was like, oh my gosh, these are here? These are in Spain? What? Yeah. Yeah. Are you in Kotor, Montenegro?
No, in Budva.
Okay, I don't know.
So it just okay. Like, I love Kotor. It really reminds me of Canada with the mountains and the lake there.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's not really a lake, but it's the bay. Yeah, so it's 20 to 30 minutes during wintertime driving, because summertime it gets so busy, it's like an hour and a half. To get to them, like it's so busy there, but I really do like it, and it's laid back. So I love that I can go to Barcelona and I see all my friends, and it's busy, and there's so much to do. And you know, there's pockets of Barcelona where it is a little bit quieter, but I still kind of get a little bit overwhelmed because I do like peace and quiet sometimes. So then I'm in Montenegro, I enjoy my place there, and I chill out, and I've got some friends there. Then I get bored. So then it's like, okay, now I need to go somewhere. So for me, I love having that balance of two places to kind of go back and forth to in between my other travels and enjoy life that way. But it's easy because I'm single, so I don't have to worry about anybody else's schedule. And I work from home. I work for myself, obviously. And so I've got a lot of freedoms that way. So it is a bit different for me than it would be for somebody who's in a relationship or a family with kids. But it's finding the lifestyle that suits the time now, because I also say to people, it's not forever. Kids will grow up. They eventually move out, move on, do things. So it's just a chapter of life. And who knows where else I'm going to live in the world? Like, I know I'm not done yet.
Well, that's sort of, I mean, that's so pronounced in the lifestyles that we have chosen, the unknown of it. Same with us. We don't know. I can't sit here and tell you with much certainty where we will be a year from now. And sometimes that's incredibly anxiety inducing, but more often than not, it just fills me with awe and wonder. And it's like, oh my gosh, I don't know. I like that. I like the unknown. I like the unpredictability of it. I mean, in addition to love, I do think that the other factor that really pushed me out of Colorado for the second time when I came here a couple of years ago was pursuit of the unknown, because although I really liked my life there, I loved my friends, my family's there, I felt that I could look into the future 20 years and tell you with a fair degree of certainty what my life would look like.
Yes.
Kind of where I'd be living, what I'd be doing. And I just longed for something that was more unwritten, I guess, that was more open to anything happening. And this life seems to give that, that's for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And does your wife travel a lot? Like, does she love travel and she's open to who knows what in the future? Or is she a little bit more like, no, Turkey's great, maybe we should stay here? Because culturally,
no, totally
it's very
open.
Different.
It is. It is very different. And we can talk more about that. But she is incredibly open to travel. She's open to anything. She's incredibly sweet. She says, wherever you want to go, I want to go. And she means it. And we'll make those decisions together, of course. Up until we rekindled our relationship 3 years ago, she actually hadn't done a whole lot of traveling outside of Turkey. Not because she didn't want to, but yeah, maybe it was cultural. I don't know. For some reason, it wasn't something, an opportunity that was, I guess, readily available to her. But since we've been together, yeah, it's so easy to just hop on a plane and go somewhere in Europe. And we've done that a number of times and absolutely loved it. So she's open to anything. I'm open to anything. I guess
I
that's
do.
why I don't know where we'll be in a year.
Right,
Yeah.
right. And I have several friends in Montenegro from Turkey, because there's a Turkish community within
Oh.
Montenegro, because it's close, but also because Montenegro is not part of the European Union. And I know for Turkish citizens, they have a great passport in a way of countries that, for you and I, being North American, Canada, US, we can go to Europe 90 days, no problem. But for Turkey, they have to fill out a visa and get a visa for that. They also have countries that we would need a visa for that they don't. But the
That's true.
closest countries for them, they need a visa for. So when I talk with my Turkish friends, if I'm traveling in Europe, they think, oh, I have to get a visa, this or that. So it is, I would find it for, if it was me, a little bit frustrating that the closest countries that I am to fly to, I have to go through extra hoops and steps to get to, because with their passport, it's countries that are a little bit further away that they've got visa-free access to as well.
I hadn't thought about that like that, but I mean, that's true. Yeah, I'm just reflecting right now. We've been to Portugal together, to Paris, to Austria. Yeah, she needed the visa for all of that, the Schengen visa, I think it was called.
That's right.
But Montenegro, we'd be able to go to, it sounds like,
Montenegro, you have no problems.
without a, all
Yeah.
right, that's the place.
You
Okay.
won't need a visa for Montenegro. And I believe, though, that she would only be allowed 30 days. But I
Okay.
do have friends that what they do, and they go to Montenegro and they live there full time. So they're there for 30 days. Then they go to Croatia. Well, I guess Croatia is now part of the EU, but they go to Serbia or Albania for a day trip, or go for a weekend and then come back and then get their 30 days again, which,
Really?
I mean, it's a lot. I
Wow.
did that when I lived
Yeah.
in Costa Rica originally, but I had 90 days. And even 90 days, I was like, oh, I gotta go to Nicaragua again. So
Whoa, I'm impressed they do that.
they do it every 30 days.
Well.
So, I mean, in a way, I guess, I mean, I always try to look at the silver lining of everything. So I guess every 30 days, it's making you do something. So even if you work a couple of those weekends in the 30 days, then you go, and Montenegro is quite small, so it's pretty easy to get to Serbia or Albania, or Bosnia. So the surrounding countries are pretty close, because it's not a very big country. It's beautiful, but not
Right.
very.
Right. Yeah, I really like to hear stories like that because it reminds me that so much is possible. Like it just requires a little bit of ingenuity some of the time. It requires, yeah, maybe going out of our way a little bit more than would be ideal. But if we're willing to think outside the box and then, yeah, do things a little differently, we can just whole horizons open up. I mean, they live there full time.
Full
And every
time.
30 days they leave.
That's right.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That's great.
It comes to kind of the way that I think of things too, is how bad do you want it? Like what's
Yeah.
important, or how bad do you want it? And yeah, there's hoops to jump through, obviously, especially for them with every 30 days, but for them it's worth it. They're like, I just go away. I go for the weekend, I go for one night, and it's one night once a month.
Right.
Like it's no big deal. And we think too, if we look at some business people who travel for work, they're gone more than one night a month.
That's a good point.
So it's,
Definitely.
sometimes we just have to change perspective, because we could think of it, oh, every month I have to go somewhere and
Yes.
it's a drag and it's negative. But the other part is, you can check out a new city, a new wherever, and it just one night, and enjoy it and
Exactly.
just see more.
Exactly. That's the spirit.
So great. So now you're there full time, and so you've got your residency now. What about driving? Do you drive while you're there?
We rent cars on occasion.
Okay. So do you still have your US driver's license, or have you
I
gotten
do.
a Turkish one?
No, I haven't gotten a Turkish one. Yeah, so still using my US license. Yeah.
Okay. I'm the same when I'm in Europe. I don't need I don't have a vehicle there, and I really don't want one. But if need be, I can rent a car. But I always just ask
Same.
to see if people have gone through the process of getting that driver's license in another country.
Right. That's a very likely hoop that we will be jumping through here in the probably not too distant future. To this point, I mean, you've been to Istanbul. You know how crazy it is to drive
So
here, find
you don't want to
parking,
drive there much.
anything like that. Yeah, it's quite the experience. It feels like a video game, but it isn't. That's the problem. It's like, oh, this is a video game. This is fun. I can kind of do whatever I want. But then if you get in a car accident or something, you can't just reset the level. It's real life. I haven't been in a car accident, but it's been close. But I do think that ultimately we'll want to get a car and I'll get a license here just because it opens up a whole world of opportunities. I mean, we rent a car, we can get out of the city. It works. It would be nice to do it, on this at the spur of a moment. I mean, even though 20 million people live here, it's still surprisingly fast when you have a car and you leave early in the morning before rush hour to all of a sudden be in just open space. I mean, it's from where we are, it's like 30 minutes. And you're like, oh my gosh, a city? What? Where did that go? So that's important to me.
Right. It does give an extra level of freedom, for sure. Okay, what about bank accounts? Do you
Bank
have a
accounts.
Turkish bank account?
I do.
And
Zirat.
how
Zirat
was the
Bankasi.
process of opening a bank account?
That was surprisingly simple, actually. Gosh, we did that. I had to get my residence permit. So that was the big thing. The residency permit was the big thing. That was the big stressor. I mean, yeah, there were so many hoops and hurdles to jump through and so many moments where we didn't think it was going to happen. There was a lot of stress, to be honest, the first handful of months that I was here. But once that was handled, the other stuff has been pretty easy to do. So the Turkish bank account was, we just went to the bank. I have it so much easier being in a foreign country in a different language because my wife is with me and she handles everything. I just sit there and just like, yeah, I give my signature when I'm told to, and then I get a card and it all works out.
Nice. Yeah, it is a lot easier when you have that help, whether it's in your case a spouse, or for somebody else it's a friend, or even an agency, because I know there's agencies that help that do that stuff too. So but I know when I mean I've gotten better with getting help because I know it makes it easier. But when I like my first time when I moved to Costa Rica, I was like, I'm going to do it all myself. I can do this. Paperwork, filing, and then it's and Costa Rica, and this is going back over a decade ago, so it was quite some time ago, and I know it's still frustrating there, but it would be, you have to get this paper signed at that window, and then you have to come back to this window and go there, and of course in Spanish, and I mean even to this date my Spanish is not that good, and so it became very frustrating. So then the next time when I went to Spain, I was like, okay, some of it I did myself because I was like, okay, I know I can do some of these things. And then at a certain point, it's like, and other people said the same thing. Do these things yourself. Then once it's time to get appointments and start to do other things, then absolutely you want to hire somebody. Because in Spain, even though anybody's supposed to be able to get an appointment, you go online and there's never any available. But when you have a lawyer, you have an appointment within a couple of weeks. They've got the connections or the special link or
They're
whatever it
doing
may be. I
something.
don't really know.
Exactly.
But
Exactly.
it does help.
I've agree. Yep, I have had we have had the same experience. We tried to do it on our own with the residency permit. And yeah, we weren't successful until we got a lawyer. And they made our lives so much easier. And we're like, why did we put ourselves through all of that hassle? We ended up paying more money trying to do it on our own too. So, you know, we were motivated to save money, but that backfired. And then we didn't even get the thing that we wanted. So I would definitely recommend that for anybody who's thinking of moving abroad. It's funny, you were saying that when you went to Costa Rica, you just wanted to do it all on your own. And I have very much the same mentality. And I'm guessing that's probably a trait that many of us have in common, us expats and nomads. We're independent. We want to find our own way in the world. And so I come up against the same sort of thing where to recruit other people to help me out and to actually be dependent on other people is a little bit of a bitter pill to swallow, but a really good one to swallow too.
It is. And I mean, it's, and I think I'm glad you said it that way, because it is true. I don't want to be dependent on anyone. I don't want to be a hassle or be a problem or mm-hmm. or things like that. But obviously when we hire somebody, we are dependent on them, but we're not really a hassle or a problem because it's the service that they're offering and they know what they're doing. And almost every time I've tried to do something myself, in the long run, it either costs me way more in time because yeah. I've got to figure it all out, or I made a mistake and I've got to do things over, or cost me more money because, again, I did something wrong and I got to do it over. So I have to pay for it again. And so most yep. times it is just easier to hire somebody who knows what they're doing and get it done. And it makes it less stress for us and generally quicker as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We save time, we save money, we save headaches.
That's right.
Yep.
That's right. So for you being there, even though you had been there before, what have you found mm-hmm. kind of culturally have been like really positive, great things that you love that's so different mm-hmm. about what you're used to from the US, and maybe some things yeah. that have been a bit of a struggle?
Yeah. One of the things, I really love Turkish people. I really admire them. They seem to have a depth to them that I just don't come across very often, like of character, of soul. They're just deep people more often than not. They're deep thinkers. They're deep lovers. I'm really drawn to them, their communities. I really admire how respectful they are to other people. So they have all these terms that they use when they're addressing people. Elders, for example, but not elders. Just if somebody's older than you, you'll attach a word like abla or hocam or bey to their name. And that is just a sign of, I see you, like I respect you. Like this is me acknowledging, not that you're better than me, but just that you're older, and I recognize that. And it's, I really respect it. I really like it. It's just people see each other in that way. That's really sweet. The community aspect is really strong. Like, it does. We don't have family here where we live, for example, on this exact street, and we don't really have close friends, but we definitely have community. Like, we go out in this street, we walk down the road, and there's people that we're familiar with that we see regularly, and we just feel a connection with. I'll tell a story. I think it illustrates the way that people really care for one another here and really go out of their way to help people in ways that I think are rare from at least from where I come from. So my wife, Istanbul is full of cats. You know that. You've been here. Yeah. There's cats everywhere. Stray cat city. Oh my goodness. But they're really well taken care of for the most part. And part of the reason is because the residents go out of their way to care for the cats. My wife, she's constantly finding new cats that she's caring for, and she's always buying food for them. And every single day, she's going out of her way to ensure that these cats that are in our neighborhood are well taken care of, and not just her, but many people. The other day, one of the cats had gotten itself high up on this abandoned building, and it was totally stuck up there. It was not going to be able to come down on its own. And she has this ear that can hear a cat meow from miles away. I didn't hear it. She heard it. She found it. And very quickly, as she was trying to figure out how to get this cat down, a whole congregation of people, passerbys, came and they all put their minds together to help one another figure out how to get this cat down. I mean, these were people that theoretically were on their way to work or dinner or something, but they all took time out of what it was that they were doing to come together and support one another in this enterprise of saving this baby cat. And it was just, it was so sweet. It was so heartwarming that so many people would go out of their way to do that.
Right.
There's no bystander effect here.
That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's nice. And yeah, there are a lot of cats. And I did notice as well when I was there that they are well taken care of. And that's the same thing in Montenegro. Where I'm at in Budva, we have a lot of cats. Some other areas have dogs. But people go around all the time. They feed the cats. You see trays and dishes with food and water and everything put out. And you'll see people calling them and petting them, and they'll know which ones get along and which cats don't get along. And then it, like, they know. And I was talking to somebody one day and I said, you know, I feel bad for these cats, like they're homeless cats. And he said, don't feel bad for them. He said, for one, they're very well taken care of. People are feeding them all the time, which is true. Even kids, like I saw a kid one time on a skateboard and he would skate a bit and then stop, put some food down. And he's looking for cats to feed with his food in his backpack as he's going.
Oh, that's so
I don't know
sweet.
If he was heading anywhere specifically or just to feed the
Right.
cats.
Right. That's cute.
And he said also too, he said, the good thing about it is there's no mice and there's no rats because the cats.
Totally.
Also kind of keep those things away. So he said, you know, be kind of happy about it. And they all have places to go where they can stay warm and have shelter and things like that. So they honestly, some of those cats are probably more well taken care of than some people's pets.
I think so too. I think so too. And they have the freedom to roam and go where
That's
their
right.
little hearts desire.
Yeah, and they get lots of attention. The tourists give them attention.
Oh,
the people
my
who
God.
Live there give them attention. So they are
Smothered,
well taken care of, but that is for anybody who's going to move to a place like that or numerous other places to realize that the pet population and how they're taken care of do vary from country to country and city to city. Costa Rica, for example, there was a lot of homeless dogs and they are not taken care of. And it's really sad.
Yeah, it's really sad to see that. Yeah, you can see their ribs and they're so hungry. Yeah, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah. So, it really is a sad thing in other cases. But I almost had a cat one time. I came home from a jog and it was this cute little kitten on the stairs. And I tried to give it some water. It didn't want any. So I just gave it a little pet. And I went inside and I was going upstairs and I was going around kind of the corner to go up more stairs. And I look down to see where I'm stepping. And there's this little kitten following me up to my
Following you.
apartment. And I was looking at him like, oh, you're so cute. But I travel too much to have a cat. And I thought to have somebody in my apartment more often than I am, because I have a cat that I never see, didn't make sense. So I had to bring him outside. I hesitated. I'm like, well, maybe I could just bring him in for a minute. But the other part of my brain is like, don't, because it won't just be a minute.
Right. A minute becomes a lifetime. Exactly.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. Great.
And I think you'd asked me about some of the difficult parts as well. Many people here do speak English, but not everybody. I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to like think in my personal experience, like put a percentage on it. I don't know. Maybe 30% of the people I come across speak English, like really well. And then a lot of people, you know the basics. Sometimes I don't pick up on, and maybe it's because I've been here as long as I have, but sometimes I do feel that I pick up on a certain maybe expectation that some people have, that people like myself will make an effort to learn Turkish. So every now and then I feel, I mean, this is probably incredibly normal as an expat, but I do feel not always fully welcomed or fully included. Mm-hmm. And that's not with everybody, but it's some of the time. And I think that as I improve my Turkish, which is slow going, it is very difficult for me. I experience people that I've even seen for some time, I experience them opening themselves up more to me. So I think that they really appreciate my efforts, even if they're slow going. And that's helping me feel a little bit more at home as well. It's taken some time to feel at home. Normal, but it's starting to.
Mm-hmm. And that is a big thing too, I think, for people to know. A couple of points there is it does take time to feel at home. At first, it's always exciting. Everything's new and interesting and it's great. And then I find probably around the 9 month mark, and of course it's different for everybody, maybe 6 months, 9 months, it depends, where there starts to be that, okay, well, this is normal. This is life. Could be a little bit of uncertainty. Did I do the right thing? Mm-hmm. Perhaps loneliness for some, and kind of questioning and not really feeling part of the community because we don't really know people. And then especially if there's a language barrier. And I agree too that every time that an effort is put in, even if I say things wrong or bad, people are more welcoming, because I think a little bit because the world is so global in a sense, and there is so much movement, and especially in a place like Turkey or a place like Barcelona, where there's so many expats and so many people immigrating and moving and or just digital nomads there for a year and gone, that there is a bit of a concern about losing the culture, losing the language, losing like kind of what is, I'll use the word quote, normal for them, but their lifestyle, their culture, that all these different people are coming in and they're concerned and rightfully so, a little bit of a loss happening. And so it's like, well, we don't want to encourage the loss, or maybe they won't be here very long and we'll kind of stick to ourselves.
That's a great point. It's such a good point. And as people, who are living in these other places, it's, I don't want to water down the culture that is here. I don't want to be part of a movement that ends up watering down or homogenizing or making it look more like America, or Canada or something. I love it because it's so culturally distinct from what I'm familiar with, and it's so rich in its culture. So I really appreciate that point that you're making. I definitely want to do my best to immerse myself in the culture through their language or through their arts or through their sports or whatever it happens to be, so that I'm not inadvertently sort of imposing my own or being part of a movement maybe that ends up inadvertently imposing our own values or cultural norms on these different places.
And there's many things to do to participate. I mean, and for me too, part of the reason why we move to different countries is to experience different things. And so when languages are tough, that can be hard, because I honestly, yes, I don't think I'll ever learn Montenegrin. Like, it's such a hard language, like words.
I
words
bet
and
it
some
is.
Basics and stuff, but not fluent conversation. Yeah. It's a really tough
tall
one.
Order.
But but then there's things, as you said, it's practicing with whatever their cultural festivities are, whatever they, even you don't have to be fully a religious person to participate in those types of activities that they have that the religious people participate in, or like Ramadan is a big thing. I think that would be hard to go through that for a month, but even if somebody participates for a week or something, like there's other things that they can do to be part of the culture that is going on. And Spain has all kinds of things. And of course, each region of Spain has different things that go on as well. And I'm sure
that's
the same
right.
is within Turkey too. So there's many things that we can do to help keep the culture going, participate in it, be part of the community, because that's the whole point of being there. I personally do get frustrated a little bit when I hear people kind of say comments about, and it's everywhere in the world or wherever I'm at, and they say comments about how back in their home countries, like in Spain and Montenegro's more so than Spain, Sundays, everything's closed. I mean, in Montenegro, the restaurants are open. Oh. Spain, some grocery shops and 24-hour shops and stuff will be open. But in Montenegro, Sunday, it's like the restaurant, coffee shop, that's it. Everything is closed. And I've heard people complain about it. Well, they should be open. Well, why should they? I remember as a kid, Sundays things were closed and then it changed. But why? the word should is a word I'm really trying to just take out of my vocabulary, because things should or shouldn't. Yes. It is the way it is. Embrace the way it is. And my thought is, if you don't like the style, the lifestyle, the culture, the weather, the whatever it may be, there's another place for you. You know, keep
there you go.
Moving on and traveling to find your place.
There you go. That's great. I just like the way you said it. Why should it be? Really? It should be? What? Who are you to, just claim, be the arbiter of when things should or shouldn't be open in that example? I'm going to watch for the ways that I do that too. I'm sure that I do them without catching myself.
We all do. And in part just because of habit, right? Like we're just so used to how things are, and it's habit. But then it's like, well, wait a minute, why is that better? Because then I think if people don't have to work on Sundays, they have that time to spend with their friends, their family. I mean, they're not going shopping because nothing's open, which is good, but it's more of that friends and family community time, go to the beach, the park, go hiking, do something, or just relax and sit at home and read a book.
Right. Exactly. And as you said, if it's just not somebody's vibe, then the whole world is at their fingertips, theoretically. So they can keep on searching until they find something that really works.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so you've been there now for a few years. So what are you doing for work?
So I am a therapist. So I work remotely still. Most of my clients are based in Colorado, which is where I have my licensure. But I also am seeing some clients who themselves are expats or digital nomads, or just living some sort of international lifestyle. So I have some clients who are based in various countries and cities in Europe, Turkey, and then primarily stateside, it's in Colorado. So it's going well. Yeah.
Good. I think that's, it's almost nice because when I'm in Montenegro, I think we're pretty close to the same time zone. I love that I can have my mornings to kind of do my thing, have my routine. And I usually start calls and things around 1 o'clock-ish in the afternoon for the North American clientele. And it took a bit for me to get used to, but I really, really like it now.
Yeah. I'm following in your footsteps in that sense. I'm still in the adjustment period because I'm typically a morning bird and not a night owl, but I'm increasingly a night owl. And you're right. Those empty hours in the morning are lovely. There's no pressure. There's nothing I have to do in those hours. I get to choose to spend them how I would like to. And for me, probably just a couple hours ahead of you. I'm not sure. But most of my calls start around 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And so it's interesting. I mean, it was an adjustment. It's like, okay, 3 p.m.'s here. It's time to get into work mode. But I am starting to appreciate that more and more for those morning hours.
Yeah. And it's, and that depends for everybody, wherever you're deciding to move or to relocate to, where your clientele is, those hours. I would like to spend some more time in Asia, but then that's a big time difference, and it makes it really, really difficult having North American clients. So it's a thing to consider for people if they're mm-hmm. wanting to move abroad or even just spend 3 months or something somewhere. Those time zones, they do make a difference.
They really do. I was speaking with a therapist today who has clients in Canada. Her practice is in Canada, and she was recently in Asia. And she was on the call on the phone at 3 a.m. wondering how exactly it was that she got to that point in her life. But it was worth it for her. It was worth it for her because the freedom and being in Asia. But yeah, that would be a struggle. A 3 a.m. phone call would.
That would be a really big adjustment. But I guess, you know, yeah. Like anything, if it's worth it, we'll do it. Uh-huh. And also we That's become right. used to it. A new routine, mm-hmm. no matter what it is always hard at first, and then it becomes normal. So.
Right. Right. It's so good because we realize we get so locked into our routines, and it's really good. It opens us up. It reminds us there's more to life. There's more to us when we really shake things up like that.
Absolutely. That's true. Well, Trevor, if people wanted to get in touch with you, they wanted to talk with you, they, you know, about various things that you could help them with, where is the best place for them to get in touch with you?
So they can send me an email if they would like to, trevor@theothertherapy.org. They can also go to that website, theothertherapy.org. Those are probably the two best ways. I have an Instagram, other_therapy, or LinkedIn, just with my name. Any of those ways would be great. Yeah, just to hear from people, whether they want to chat or whether they would like my services. It'd be great to hear from anybody.
Sounds great. And I will be sure to put all of those links in the show notes so people can access them okay. easily. Well, okay. thank you Excellent. Very much for your time, Trevor. I really appreciate it. And I know our listeners got some valuable information.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you.